are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back, OT in the early bird, the Good Morning Show at WB, the station that makes it okay, real talk for real time. We want to thank Dr. Peter Sharp, criminologist from LSU, and Dr. John Penny, criminologist from SUNO. And I would really appreciate Dr. Sharp and Dr. Penny saying that the way we deal with this topic, the only way it's dealt with publicly is the way we do here at WBOK, real talk for real time, upfront and personal with these issues. Try to be objective and try to tell it like it T.I. is. And talking about telling it like it T.I. is, unprisoned stories from the system. I don't think anybody has done a better job at telling it like it is than Eve Abrams, a producer, a writer, and documentarian, educator, and Ms. Donnie Levine, the director of Avodah. Guys, welcome to the Good Morning Show.
Thank you so much, Oliver.
Eve, welcome back.
Thank you.
Unprisoned, wow. This documentary is the... you have several segments.
14 segments.
14 different segments.
Yeah.
The last one people talked about for quite some time, especially the story about the guy from Tremé. Mm. I heard more comments after the show in the days following than I heard about a lot of subjects we deal with.
Oh, about Reuben Cain. Wow.
Yeah, about Reuben Cain. Yeah. Absolutely.
This one is a little bit different than the other ones in that the people who are in the documentary are not. All of them are not directly affected. So this one is really looking at whose responsibility is it to deal with mass incarceration. And I think it's everybody. I think that's the answer, is it's everybody's responsibility, not the people who are most immediately impacted time after time. So that's what I was trying to get at with this one.
But, you know, I can't have you guys on the show, Donnie and Eve, and not really talk about current events right now.
Absolutely.
Wow. First of all, are you surprised we are where we are? And as someone who's dedicated their life to looking at justice, social injustice or justice, where are we headed?
I'm sadly not surprised, actually. Last night I was watching the new Black Panther movie, Vanguard of the Revolution,
yeah.
And it was so interesting to me how much time and energy is put on suppressing people wanting to change things. Mm-hmm. And I think when you suppress something, it's going to bubble up. So we're seeing now things bubbling up in a really dramatic, violent, unfortunate way.
Donnie Levine?
I'm surprised, I think, because I'm an optimist.
Right.
Or maybe I just don't want to be not surprised because that feels really hard. I've got young kids and I don't want that.
It's really kind of sad to say when we say someone like me, I think about it when I say, no, I expected this. It's really kind of hard.
Yeah, I think I'm not ready to say I expected it, although I guess I'm not surprised.
Right. Look, we have a clip that we're going to set up, and we're going to play this clip, and then we're going to come back. Anybody who's calling, please call in and hold while we do the setup for Unprisoned, Stories from the System.
I'm not a religious person, but like a lot of Jews, there's one day a year when I pretty much always go to synagogue, Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement. So there I was sitting in the beautiful sanctuary of Torah Synagogue in Uptown New Orleans. I looked down at the holiday bulletin, and there was a posting about mass incarceration. It was an invitation to learn about the issue. We are all living with mass incarceration one way or another. It affects everyone, passively or actively. This is Unprisoned. I'm Eve Abrams.
Sometimes people ask me if I like New Orleans. People ask me, do you like New Orleans? Do you like it? Do you love New Orleans?
This is Rabbi Alexis Burke. She was a rabbi in Nashville before becoming the rabbi of Torah Synagogue.
It's a really hard question. It's very hard to like a place that I consider has made certain for generations that many members of our society do not have their basic needs met. Segregated, incarcerated, marginalized. Do I like that? Do I like to sit on my front porch, which is beautiful? Do I like my front porch? I really do. I love the balmy evening air. But
it's not that simple. Getting used to some things can lead to complacency. Torah Synagogue isn't the only mostly white and middle-class community of faith that's involved helping formerly incarcerated people. But still, I took note of it. One of the names at the bottom of the posting was Julie Silbert. She's a congregant at Toro.
We are studying and educating our congregational members about mass incarceration and associated issues. because we felt that it was important to have more people in our, I'm going to call it socioeconomic position, become aware of these issues.
One of the first things Toro's Mass Incarceration Initiative did was get in touch with Calvin Duncan. He came and spoke to Toro's 7th and 8th graders.
Yeah, I think it's this room we met. And I explained to them the plight of people coming home from prison, that we didn't have a place to live, we didn't have clothes, we didn't have food. To sum it up, what I took for granted for 28 and a half years in prison, food, shelter, clothing, a community, when I got out of prison, I didn't have any of that.
You might remember Calvin Duncan from the first Unprison story. He's a big voice about the importance of voting for former prisoners returning home to their communities. Calvin was incarcerated in Angola for a crime he didn't commit. When he told his story to the young people at Toro Synagogue,
they got it. Then they went and told their parents. And then the parents went and told the rabbi. Then the rabbi suggested that they start reading the new Jim Crow. And so the next thing, I was asked to come speak to the grown-ups.
Then the young people at Toro decided to have a fundraiser for the organization Duncan helped found, the First 72 Plus, a transitional house for men being released from prison. It's named for the most critical stage of reentry, the first 72 hours a person spends after release. Toro's 7th and 8th graders organized an auction, which raised $800 for the First 72 Plus. It was the start of an ongoing relationship. Now there's a donation box at the congregation's front door. There are clothing drives and also a garden, because the young people wanted to know,
how do we get food? And so they suggested, let us come and build you a garden at the First 72 Plus. And a guy still used that garden to plant vegetables, and they eat the vegetables.
This community, we really sit on this spot that is very visible.
Terry Hunter is the board chair of social action of Toro Synagogue. The historic building is on St. Charles Avenue, right near Napoleon.
You mean physical spot?
I mean physical spot. It's a place of honor. And so it also comes with that honor comes responsibility, and it comes responsibility to the community.
Terry Hunter says anyone's first step toward action has to be awareness and understanding, bringing an issue to the forefront of a person's consciousness. But it's also crucial for people to appreciate their connection to the issue, even if it's not immediately obvious.
It's on our shoulders to make sure that we're not just closing that door and saying, well, it's not us. You know, it's not, and I think as Jews, it's, you know, we've lived that history. It's not us. And so if a society closes their back on one section, we've seen what happens. And so it is our responsibility as Jews and as members of this community to educate our community, at least our congregation, to the extent that we're able.
Well, our contemporaries and our peers,
again, congregant Julie Silbert,
might not have children or family members in the prison system. We are all affected by it. We are all impacted by it in subtle ways and not so subtle ways.
Silbert says living in New Orleans with its high crime rate means she and her family are directly impacted. She feels even stronger about this since immersing herself in literature like The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, which has led her to conclude that mass incarceration engenders crime, makes people less safe. Not everyone shares her perspective, but federal officials who agree have already begun making changes.
We all in this together, first of all. And some people, God has blessed some people with privilege.
Again, Calvin Duncan.
It's a blessing that you have not been exposed to this, that you hadn't been hauled in a police car, or had to sell drugs to pay your rent and put food on your table. It's a blessing that you hadn't been forced to do that. But you are blessed to do something else.
If we don't manifest our religious convictions through actual justice, righteousness, minimizing of a gap between what is and what could be or should be, if we're not doing that actively, then what is the point of this grand building and enormous sanctuary?
Rabbi Burke has visited Angola with members of the First 72 Plus. It's just one part of how she's actively building relationships to strengthen ties between her religious community and a larger New Orleans community.
I don't pretend to know what it feels like to be raised as a Black New Orleanian who's facing a situation of potentially being incarcerated or having a brother, uncle, cousin, father who is. But I have a very curious heart, a very burdened spirit, and I know what we can offer. I don't have a dream of saving anyone. I just feel like we got to do something together.
Unprisoned is brought to you by WWNO and Finding America, a national initiative produced by AIR with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Unprisoned's theme music is by Greg Schatz. Our editors are Vicki Merrick and Katie Rechtal. Learn more about Unprisoned at WWNO.org and Facebook.com/Unprisoned. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. This is Unprisoned. I'm Eve Abrams.
Wow, thank you. Just like the first one, very powerful, but also a different story. The first one about Reuben was about the effects of being caught up in the system and how you never seem to get away from it once you're caught up in the system. And then this one was I think, is a powerful discussion, Donnie. It talks about how oblivious many communities are. But if we're going to wind up with justice, the need for everyone to have some awareness, understanding, and to be engaged.
Yeah, so let me introduce myself.
Absolutely.
So I run a program called Avodah, the Jewish mm-hmm. Service Corps, and we place emerging Jewish leaders into a year of intensive work with local nonprofits, and we see ourselves as being intertwined both with the New Orleans Jewish community and the New Orleans social justice community. And so it gives us a unique ability to be able to be a bridge at times between the two and to connect leaders in both of those communities. And that's what this is about, right? Connecting leaders. It's not about saving people. It's not about trying to pretend that you know someone else's experience. It's about bringing people together so we can do support, education, advocacy.
Calvin Duncan's his story is 28 years for a crime he didn't commit.
Maybe 30.
And of course, his sentence wasn't over after he was released. But also he talked about the First 72, which is basically a program that is underfunded. Our businessman Blair Boutte and Reverend Smith pretty much put their own money and started the program on their own. But at best, they can help two people?
No, it's five.
Five people now at a time?
Five, but we, of course, as the incarceration capital of the world, are the reentry capital of the world.
Well, should be, in terms of real reentry. You know, so once again, we have a program that's designed to help, but doesn't even touch the tip of the iceberg when you talk about mass incarceration and reentry from mass incarceration.
Exactly. And also, of course, so then we're talking about a group of citizens, largely former felons, mm-hmm. who are banding together to help, people coming Absolutely. Home from society rather than this being taken care of by our government.
Now, I want to go to the first step towards action.
Yeah.
I think it ties into this national conversation about where we are with police brutality and injustice, whether black lives versus blue lives or whether lives matter at all. The first step towards action is awareness and understanding. Don't we have to admit that there are large groups of people who are oblivious to many of these issues?
Yeah, and I think it's because they have that privilege. Calvin talked about that a mm-hmm. little bit. You're lucky if you haven't mm-hmm. you're privileged if you haven't been hauled in the back of a police car. You're privileged if you haven't had to face these things. But I think we're living in a time where it's kind of hard to escape the anguish that some people are living in, and it's important to not just hide away in your comfort. It's wonderful that you're not having to face the brutalities mm-hmm. that some people are, but that doesn't mean that those aren't existing and that you don't bear some responsibility to helping those people. Those are fellow human beings living in your society, living in your city, living in your country.
Eve, there was another, and Donnie, there was another profound statement made in the document, and I think it's something that folk refuse to ask themselves, especially if they're oblivious, if they want to be oblivious, or so something happens to them. And that is, do I like New Orleans? This side, I can love the festivals and I can love Mardi Gras and the culture. I can love the music, But do I love the mass incarceration? Do I love the 52% of African American men unemployed? Do I love the violence that have plagued New Orleans neighborhoods for years? The economic oppression? That's a powerful question.
Indeed. I often say I miss being a visitor to New Orleans, because when I first came here, it was just a beautiful place with beautiful people. Mm-hmm. And then when you actually live here, you see that this beautiful place is riddled with so many deep, deep issues and problems. And it makes it much more complicated.
Yeah, I'm a New Orleans transplant, and I'm one of those transplants who has love like the zeal of a convert. So I do love New Orleans, and I think that Rabbi Burke is my rabbi. I'm a board member of the synagogue and, mm-hmm. and the other co-chair of this initiative, and I think...
Danny was actually in the room where I was interviewing several people who are in the documentary.
Right. Right.
I think that this is a good question when we think about love, and what does it mean to... How do we express love? How do we translate love into action? I think that's a question that religion gets at. How do we translate what we understand as what our creator, what is divine? How do we recognize divinity in each other? So it's true, you can love a place or the ideal of a place and be concerned about the action. I don't think that, I hope that it's not the intent for New Orleans to have the highest incarceration rate in the world.
I want to say on that spiritual conversation, Pastor Clay Corvin at Baptist Ministries and Pastor Mel Jones, two different walks of life, two different worlds, have committed their lives to these theological and religious discussions about, no matter what your faith is, how do we come together around that creator, around what we believe is the goodness of God, whatever form you choose to worship, but how do we come together around that thing that brings us together, no matter what our religion? You believe that's important too, Eve.
I do. I think we're in this boat together, sink or swim. I don't think that one person excelling at the expense mm-hmm. of somebody else is ever going to work. I do. I think we have a common interest, and I think it's in living peacefully and well on this planet together.
Now, Calvin Duncan said something. It's a blessing if you haven't been exposed.
Yeah.
Should we not blame people because they're oblivious? So how do we frame the conversation? And Eve, you know, as a writer and a producer, director, documentarian, the conversation and how it's structured is important. If you look at the national conversation right now, in many cases, the national conversation and the rhetoric is doing as much to fuel the flames as it is to help and heal.
Oh, yeah.
The discussion and how we paint the picture is important.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we live in a very fractured society. Mm-hmm. People listen to the news they want to listen to. They read the papers they want to listen to. You can really choose what you're hearing. I mean, that's why I made this project. I wanted more people to be aware of what's going on. I wanted to be more aware of what's going on.
Now, Donnie, I got to ask this question. You know, you're on WBOK, Real Talk for Real Time. A white Jewish female filmmaker, documentarian. How different is that to be in the middle of these types of discussions? And how do you feel being in the middle of it?
So I run a Jewish social justice organization, mm-hmm. and my job is to educate young Jewish adults, most of whom are white, many of whom are from the Northeast, most of whom are from very privileged situations, mm-hmm. and my job is to educate them about the issues of domestic poverty and racial justice. That's mm-hmm. the mission of our organization, and that's my mm-hmm. mission. And I think that as someone who grew up with a lot of privilege, I grew up in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. in a majority black city in a small white neighborhood in D.C. I went to a private school, and I was someone who was blessed with the ability to be oblivious. Mm-hmm. I had police encounters growing up and walked away from them laughing. And I know now, as a result of education that I have received, that it's because of my privilege. So I think it's my responsibility to educate other white people, other people like me, and I think that's what we're learning.
Well, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, Eve and Donnie, I want to talk about who's really in prison. You know, is this effort to free us all because of our policies and decisions, because of mass incarceration, because of Jim Crow? How do we all get out of prison? We'll talk about that after the break.
You are now listening to the radio station that's keeping it real. WBOK 1230 AM, where it's real talk for real time.
You are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Oliver Thomas, the early bird in time. WBOK listening audience, man. We're on with Eve Abrams, our writer, producer, documentarian, educator, and Miss Donnie Levine, the director of Avodah. You know, Martin Luther King said injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. Donnie, we got some quotes about, you know, people we should have listened to a long time ago.
Yeah, one of the factors that really guides us as an organization and me personally, and I think the work we're doing, is Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, who was a rabbi very active in the civil rights movement, and he says, in a just society, few are guilty, but all are responsible.
Wow, all are responsible. We can go to the lines right now. Line one, Brother Lionel, you're on with Eve Abrams and Donnie Levine.
Yeah, how you doing, Oliver?
Peace be to you.
Just listening in is very interesting, especially with what these young ladies are bringing forth from a whole different perspective. I would just say that faith and love are both acts and words, you know, and I believe that love has four levels of sharing, serving, suffering, and even sacrifice. And I'm reminded of a young lady that I've been following, Dr. Joy DeGroote, who's put something out years ago entitled Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And I would just urge everybody to kind of take a look at that presentation that she did, because I think it would really open up some eyes and bring more people to the table to try to work together like these young ladies are suggesting.
Thank you, Lionel. I appreciate it very much, man. Wow, 504-260-9265. Join the discussion. 8:38 a.m. in the morning. Guys, let's talk about that. People angry, hurt, confused, post-traumatic stress syndrome. America suffering from some real mental anguish right now, Eve?
It seems like it. Yeah, it seems like it's a time where a lot of people just kind of want to shut down and protect what they have. Mm-hmm. But it's really a time when we need to open up and be loving and see each other's humanity.
Yeah, in Judaism and
there's a lot of pain out there, Donnie.
There's a lot of pain, and in many
everybody seems to be angry. The CEO, who's got a $20 million bonus, is upset. The presidential candidate, billionaire Donald Trump's upset. The guy on the corner is upset. The police officer's upset. The judge is upset. The politicians, tough talk, they're angry. Who's happy?
Well, everyone's upset when they have a microphone in front of their face, but if you go home and you talk to them around the table, some people are upset, people are hurting, but you ask me, do I love New Orleans? And this is why I love New Orleans, because joy is an important part of life here. People still celebrate. Celebrations still go on. People are still dancing. You're not going to let them kill us, right? Like, this is what we say. We can't kill our spirit. And when that happens, when people are really mad all the time and unable to celebrate all the time, that's when we lose.
I guess that is the beauty of New Orleans, is that you can do what you want. You can oppress us. You can kill us. You can lock us up and keep us out. But still we dance. Still we celebrate. Line two. Miss Alice, you're on with our guests.
Oliver, I just want to say thank you to WBOK for you've had these, I think this young lady on before.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say thank you because, and I don't care what people like or dislike about me, I'm for right. We have a lot of Archer Bunker black folks that listen to, that call the station, I'm not going to call his name, that talks about our brothers, Jewish community. But I want to ask those people, how many have taken in and have eight-year-olds to start a program to help those incarcerated men that are coming out of prison?
Mm.
See, we are on this earth for one purpose, that's to serve each other. And as that young lady stated, they have gone through a lot themselves as Jewish people. And so there's bad and good in every race. But I just want to say, young lady, thank you. And I want to thank WBOK for having this, because there are a lot of people who don't know that this is going on.
Right.
And you have opened up eyes to see there are brothers and sisters of different persuasions that are out here helping us.
Miss Alice, thank you. I really appreciate profoundly appreciate that, because what you got to know is we're criticized here at the station for many cases for being too open-minded, and we don't apologize for advocating for African Americans and for advocating for our community, but there are people who want it to be all one-sided. If we're objective or if we're fair.
I've been listening to you guys for years.
Yeah, I appreciate
that. That's exactly true. So I just want to say to WBOK management, and this is the heart, that, and for you, to thank you for bringing on this, and thank you, young people, for having the courage to do what you are doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening, Ms. Alice.
Well, you know, from Paul Boyer to Susan Henry, our new manager, even with their own views, they've encouraged us to at least get the information out. We're going to talk about what other stations are not going to do, other media outlets, and they're not going to challenge the thought we have. But I think, I think we all, Donnie, I think we all have to be open-minded. Yes, people are hurting. Yes, you may feel a certain way. But if you come to the table with a closed mind, it's very hard to come to a solution.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. And I want to say thank you, too, because you have to earn trust as someone who knows, you know, that I grew up oblivious to this problem. You have to earn trust from community members who are affected. So I want to thank everybody thank Calvin, who has always come and spoken to my Avodah members. I want to thank Norris Henderson, who took us to Angola with Rabbi Burke.
Right.
I want to thank people for having trust that we would listen, because not everyone listens. A lot of people in the African-American community have been talking about this situation for a long time, and people uptown haven't always listened. So thank you for trusting us.
Eve, Unprisoned is, first of all, I love the title of this documentary. And we were talking offline right before the break. All of us are really kind of locked up. If we were not locked up in our own culture, our own race, our own gender, our thoughts and ideals, I think some of the problem is how are each of us released
from our own brains?
From our own brains.
I think you have to listen to other people. You have to engage. You have to read. You have to watch. You have to seek it. I think as hard as it might seem to learn. We're spending as much time trapping ourselves in our own thoughts. We could spend that same amount of time engaging with other people. I think so. It seems like it's everywhere.
Right.
I think you just have to be open to it. And I think in a dynamic city like New Orleans, we're at an advantage. There are people, all different kinds of people around you all the time. Step out of your bubble.
Wow. Thank you. We're going to realize right. Lavelle, man, peace. You're on with Eve Abrams and Donnie Levine.
Good morning, all of us.
Good morning, man. Yeah. Bless you, man.
Yes. I want to just start off by alerting your readers to a book by Dan Baum called Nine Lives.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan, I met Dan when he was working on that book, post-Katrina, and he made a comment that has resonated with me ever since. And he told this to a group of students at Tulane University. He said, the Jewish community in New Orleans is different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all he said. He said it's different. And you know, I think that's very important when I think of things that were said after Katrina by Mr. James Reese of Uptown.
Mm-hmm.
He made
yes.
a comment who had an Israeli air unit or something protect his home uptown during Katrina. He made the comment that we are going to keep, meaning them, we're going to change this city demographically, economically, and something else, or else we're out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've seen that ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And my hat's off to Eve. I know Eve. Eve is an incredible journalist. I cannot say that about her other colleagues at that station, including her supervisor. I just have those passionate feelings about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that station has never had, that I can think of other than Andre Perry, a strong African-American male presence, and now he's with BOK, thankfully for that.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to understand something. This community is different on all levels, including this Jewish community. When I first moved back here 6.5 months ago from Texas, after being an executive editor of a daily newspaper, I've had sports experience, other experience, I walked into the Jewish community center with a resume and basically was shunned. So it's not all peaches and cream here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, what they may be doing is all sounds great, but it's not. There's some undercurrents. And I'll just close with this. I've lived all over this country, and the one city I will always remember the Jewish community having a real impact in terms of not deserting the city or not bashing it was Gary, Indiana. That may come to a surprise or something.
Mm, it does.
That's the only one where I saw where the temple actually was engaged and didn't desert it. So, you know, it's not what people think. Eve, again, you do a great job. You've done a great job with that series. But I cannot say the same thing about the station overall. I think it's to me, I've listened to public stations all over, public radio stations all over the country, and I've never seen one quite like this.
Thank you, Levin.
In terms of its avoidance. And we just need to look at that. We need to look at who is running mm-hmm. this city from behind the scenes, behind the curtain, and understand that it's not, you know, and I can take flack for this. I've been taking flack my entire career. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, it is what it is. And mm-hmm. I hate that cliche, but that's the truth.
Thank you, LeVar.
That's the truth.
So appreciate
I'd
that.
Like to see him address that.
All right. Yeah. Different opinions?
Well,
pushback?
Well, I think I would be careful, cautious, when we talk about the Jewish community, just like the black community. Mm. You know, people are people. They're good people. They're bad people. They're engaged people. They're disengaged people. That can even happen within a house, let alone a huge monolith like the community. There are many, many communities. And I don't think because you're white, black, Hispanic, Jewish, Catholic, whatever, it makes you a certain thing. You're still a person.
Donnie, as a director of Avadah, especially one of the agencies that to educate young Jewish kids on oppression, the realities of America, I've heard people say before that the Jewish community isn't what it used to be in terms of the dialogue, the relationships with African Americans and oppressed communities. What's your take?
Well, I didn't grow up here. I've only been here for about 8 years, so I can't address what things used to be. But I think I've definitely heard that, and I think that that's probably a trend nationwide, right? As there was a lot of, mm-hmm. I mean, I think about my own family. My grandparents all fought in World War II. They came back from World War II, were given GI Bill benefits, moved out of the city. My family was a poor immigrant family, mm-hmm. which I think is a common story from a lot of Jews who came to avoid Nazi Germany, and they bought a house in the suburbs, and my family was in Louisville, Kentucky. They moved to Louisville, Kentucky, mm-hmm. opened a liquor store, and didn't have a lot of interaction with other poor communities. Mm-hmm. I think that's a common story, and maybe as suburbanization continued, segregation enhanced the distance between communities, between the Jewish community and the black community, and there was less conversation. And I think now we're seeing more of a return to integration in the city. And I think it's important as young people like me, young Jews like me, move into the city that we reach out to the other people that are sitting around the table with us and have conversations. And I think that's what our organization is trying to do. That's what we're trying to do with this work, with the synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to reach across and say, how have you been hurt in the past? Here's how we've felt in the past. What can we do to talk about it?
Being presented with an international and national opportunity for whatever walk of life you come from, whatever race, religion, or culture, it's an opportunity to do some healing. We're at that moment in time right now.
That we have an opportunity
yes.
to heal? I think yeah. we're always at that moment that we have an opportunity to heal, right? We're always at a moment where we can reach out and understand and listen.
Right.
I think that's the most important thing, is listening to other people.
Well, talk about listening. We got Mr. Lawrence. You're on with our guests.
I just want to give my experience with the Jewish people
mm-hmm.
from the time I was born till I was, well, I guess a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was born around South Rampart Street.
Mm-hmm.
And there was many Jewish people had shops on South Rampart Street. Now, at the time, you could not work as a clerk on Canal Street.
Mm-hmm.
But the Jewish people on South Rampart Street would allow you to work as a clerk in their store. They might hire a guy to be a porter. And next week, he would have a tape measure around his neck and standing at the door saying, come in and buy these pants. So they gave him, and you would go in there sometime at 12 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and then back of the store, they would have like a kitchen or a place. You could go to the back of the store and you would see like a kitchen. If they were eating lunch, the black guy would be right at the table with them, eating lunch.
Right.
So if that's my experience with the Jewish people. One other thing is, when Ralph Bunche came here, they wouldn't allow him to speak to an integrated audience. But one of the rabbis took him uptown, and they had an integrated audience uptown. And I would tell anybody to go into Touro Infirmary and look at the wall and see what Judith P. Touro had to say about serving Africans in his hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you kindly.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. I've heard those stories, too, you know, about the prominence of the relationships in the past, especially when you talk about commerce in business and how the Jewish community and the African-American community had a special relationship where that wasn't really provided by white business establishments in the past. A lot of African-American businesses grew out of their relationships with Jewish merchants.
I remember my grandmother grew up in Pittsburgh, and she would tell me stories about, you know, they were very, very poor. Her father died when she was a young girl, and her mother would take in boarders to be able to afford the home and feed her kids. And many of those boarders were African-American. And it just, you know, I think when people are poor, they are, you know, poor people together. There's a camaraderie, I feel like. And as wealth is accrued in this country, the way that we deal with wealth in this country is this ideal of some mansion behind a gate where you're separated from people. And I think that happens to everyone. I don't think it's just a Jewish thing. I think as people have wealth, they tend to forget that they're in this boat with everybody else. Not all people of wealth. Again, I don't mean to say every wealthy person, but I think that's a common trend. And Jews, you know, because of their white skin, I think it's been easier to accrue wealth in this country.
White supremacy is real.
Absolutely.
Skin color is real.
Absolutely.
Donnie, guys, we've got a couple minutes left. Anything you guys want to add before we finish?
I just want to make sure.
How do people get in touch with Avodah?
Yeah, please check out Avodah, www.avodah.net, and you can give us a call.
Donnie, can you spell it?
A-V-O-D-A-H. And Avodah, it's a Hebrew word, and it's one of those words that has a lot of translations. Mm-hmm. So it means work. It also means spiritual work. So we like to think of it as your life's work. How do you make this your life's work, the pursuit of justice?
Eve?
Oh, last words.
Yeah, absolutely. Unprisoned, powerful. Each story becomes more fascinating, intriguing than the next. How do people get in touch with you? How do they get a copy of this series? And when can we see it on the big screen?
Oh, well, there's no visuals other than the gorgeous pictures Cheryl Gerber takes. We
need to have some visuals. You know, we're a seeing society.
You can sign up on iTunes or Stitcher. You can go to WWNO.org and listen there, streaming anytime. And we have our last episode of season one airing on WWNO this Wednesday morning at 8:30, and then we'll continue airing here in WBOK through September.
Wow, this is OT in the Early Bird, man. I want to thank all of our guests. I want to thank Dr. Penny, a criminologist from SUNO, Dr. Peter Sharp, criminologist from LSU. I want to thank everybody who weighed in on the conversation. And I want to give us all the opportunity to be careful with our rhetoric, with the language that we use. But even more important than the rhetoric, how we interact with each other and how we treat each other is actually more important than what we say to each other. So that's the OT moment. This is OT and the Early Bird. Coming up, the Conscious Hour with Chuck Perkins. And stay tuned, guys. Looking forward to continuing this conversation tomorrow. WBOK is on the forefront of this conversation with how police and how our community grow and how we get along. And we're going to continue that as well as reach out to have some meetings so that we can begin to educate the public on what should 21st policing be, how should we serve our law enforcement officers, and how should they serve us. This is OT and Early Bird. Can't wait until tomorrow.